Welcome to Become the Me I Want to Be, the podcast that helps entrepreneurs like you focus on driving your personal growth, building your positive energy, and giving you the support that you need to achieve your goals so that you can win in life and succeed at home. And we're live, so welcome everybody to yet another live episode with Become the Me I Want to Be, and today's guest, Deek Koopenhaver. I hope I said that right, because I want to really jump in there and do that a little bit with Dutch accent, right? Deek, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I'd like to start off with a question, if I can. I know a little bit about you from what you've shared. Mm-hmm. I know you've been in the military as a major for 9 years, right?
I actually served as a mayor for 9 years.
You served as a mayor? Okay. And I was wondering, from that time, what would be the biggest life lesson that you've learned that you still use to this day?
To not have your decisions driven by the vocal minority. I think all too often leaders in a lot of different positions think that the vocal minority is the prevailing public opinion. I don't think that that's the case. It is just that. It's the vocal minority. Pandering to the vocal minority is not leadership. It's allowing yourself to be bullied.
Exactly. And with what do you mean by vocal minority?
When I was in office, there would be articles that would run on the newspaper, and you'd have the comments of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these people must just sit around in their parents' basement in their underwear every day, just trolling the internet to make negative comments. Okay. That's the vocal minority. Social media has exacerbated the issue because, you know, you have echo chambers where it's just a bunch of people who think like each other talking to each other, as opposed to getting out there. And I love just interacting with your average man or woman on the street. Mm-hmm. That's how I believe that you keep your finger on the pulse of the people you serve in any position.
Exactly. So, yeah. I like to ask because I want to perfectly understand. And of course, there comes a little bit the English difference in there. So vocal minority means the few that are loud, not really contributing to whatever it is, right? The challenge or the problem that we're trying to solve.
You're exactly right. And it's I'm not sure if you've ever heard the statement, it's the tail wagging the dog. If your decisions are driven by the vocal minority, rather than the dog wagging the tail, which is a small part of the dog, the tail wags the dog, which is the big part.
Mm. I see. That is a really good lesson. Now that I understand what you mean, it's a really good lesson. The reason why I'm saying that as well, because I'm tying that in with, you could have 10 people saying how amazing you are or thanking you, and you could have one person that actually says, like, you know, something bad about you. And for some reason, it's always the negative that sticks with the longest and what we focus on, instead of focusing on all those people that we helped or all those people that, you know, do believe in us or say positive things about us, right? Where does that come from?
I think it's just, we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all got our own idiosyncrasies or insecurities. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to get, you know, go down that rabbit hole or listen to that person that says something bad about you. That doesn't define who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, as a person, people are always, particularly if you're a change-making leader, if you challenge the status quo, it's going to make somebody mad. You know, that's while serving as mayor for 9 years, I served a city of 200,000 people. And I would tell people every decision I make is going to make somebody mad because you can't please 200,000 people. But if I make decisions based on the greater good of the city as a whole, then that's what I need to do. I can't let fear of criticism stop me from making a decision.
Exactly. So is that the key? Because I also the last question before we go into more like who's Deek, right? What I wanted to ask is, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you get yourself to stop focusing on, how do you call it, the
vocal minority?
Vocal minority, thank you. Or like the negative, the whiny one, right? Instead of the positive 10.
Yeah.
How do you work on that? So you start focusing on the positive and on the contribution and on what needs to be done instead of focusing on that one person that's just louder and meaner?
I focus on listening to wise people. So I had a minister make the point with me one time. He said, okay, if a dog chases your car, what do you do? And he said, you just keep on driving. So for the people that are negative in your life, if your hands are clean and your heart's pure, just keep driving. Don't listen to them.
Exactly. Great. I love that. Steve, before we continue with the questions, can you share with us your background story? How have you gotten here and what else have you been up to? And for example, I heard that you've written a book. So we definitely want to hear a little bit about that as well. And please share.
I was born in Montreal, Canada. Mm-hmm. I moved to Augusta, Georgia at the age of 4 years old. I grew up wanting to be a writer, never interested in going into politics. When I graduated from university, I went into banking and into real estate and finance, and then into nonprofit work, and then served as mayor for 9 years. So I'd tell people, and then became a best-selling author. And I tell people I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. But yes, I have a book out that came out a couple of years ago that went to number one on Amazon called The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders. It's about challenging the status quo. I was not your typical political candidate. In these hyper-partisan times, not just in the U.S., but most places, I'm politically independent.
Okay. And
I didn't skew to the extremes, which is mainly what we see in politics and the mainstream media, and it actually worked.
That's amazing. So I also like to know, what, because you mentioned, like, you know, I never thought that I would go into politics. What in the end made you decide I'm going to take this step and I'm going to go into political office?
That is a great question. So I went through a leadership program in 2004 called Leadership Georgia, which is the oldest statewide leadership program in the States. But we had a history of really bad politics in Augusta. So my graduation weekend from Leadership Georgia in 2004, we had our third current or former elected official go under indictment. So, and it was male, female, Democrat, Republican, black, white. And I thought, that's it. We need new leadership. And if a position comes available, I'm going to run for it. So our mayor at the time stepped down in 2005. So I'm like 37 years old. I'm in because we need new leadership. And ran to fulfill an unexpired term in 2005, won, and then won again in 2006 and 2010. I felt like if you presented people with an alternative to politics as usual, and you stayed positive and you kept things to the high ground, I thought that people would gravitate towards that. It was kind of my own experiment in democracy, and it worked.
Nice. And what would you say is... because we all know, like, we've seen leaders, like, we all have had our jobs where we had managers and we're like, okay, yes, this is a fantastic manager and that's a horrible manager, right? What makes someone a great leader? What are some skills that they must have?
Communication is key, but I'll tell you the main thing to me, and I share this with people all the time, the only power that any leader should concern themselves with is the power to inspire. Because no one individual can do anything alone. But if you can inspire people to work with you collaboratively, that whether it's, you know, you're an entrepreneur or CEO or a politician, if you can inspire the people around you, there's nothing that you can't accomplish. I tell people, if you have to use fear and intimidation to get your desired outcome, that's bullying. That's not leadership. And that's, you can make a profit or you can win an election in the short term doing it that way. But that is never sustainable.
Absolutely. It's the easiest way, right?
Yeah, it's the easiest way. But leadership is never easy. I think part of leadership is just leaders do something that nobody else wants to do, right? When I said I was going to run for office at 37 years old, people said, why would you want to get mixed up in all of that? And I'm like, because if nobody tries to change it, it's never going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Yeah, I had my bullies, managers, and I also had the amazing managers who were all about inspiring. Now, when you mentioned, for example, and the audience here, I'm specifically focused on entrepreneurial parents. So there's a lot of leadership going on there, right? As an entrepreneur, as a partner, as a parent, right? And again, it's so easy to make sure that, especially with your kids, that they do things by, as you say, like bullying them, just tell them like, this is what you got to do. And so I like that you inspire them. So when it comes to entrepreneurs that just started out and they get to that threshold where it's like, I'm so busy, I must get somebody to help me, right? And rather sooner than later, I've noticed when I ask them about it, they have a hard time, you know, having somebody else do stuff for them. Like entrepreneurs, when they start out, they have to do everything. They're only to rely on themselves. And now all of a sudden, they have to rely on others to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's one of the challenges that leaders have is that, you know, as you said, like you need a team. Like that's the only way you can be a good leader. How does one step over that feeling inside them? Like I must micromanage, I must control everything, right?
Yeah. And that's a great question. So I ran a nonprofit startup for 4 years, land conservation organization here before I became mayor. So the first 2 years, I was the only employee. And so I'm like, man, I just can get so much done. Nobody's weighing me down. But then I brought on somebody else to help me. And it was relinquishing some control, but I saw how much more productive I was having somebody help me. Mm. So that's the model that I've built, whether it's with my business, my consulting business. When I was in the mayor's office, I like to have small teams. But one of the keys, which most, you know, entrepreneurs are running small businesses, but one of the keys to leadership is it's more important for leaders to know what they don't know than what they do know, and surround them with people and surround themselves with teams that make up for where they fall short. And it's frankly stupid to believe that you can do everything. And I think we want to, but I had a mentor when I was running this small nonprofit startup, and I said, you know, it's great working by myself because, as I say, I don't have anybody weighing me down. And he said, look, a gentleman by the name of Hans Neuhauser said, that is the fastest way to burn out that ever going to find is if you load everything on yourself. So it does take giving up some control. But to me, I like working in a collaborative team environment, but just find those people whose skill sets are not your skill sets.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. So again, that means you have to be self-aware and figure out at first, it's like, okay, what do I love to do? What are my strengths?
Yep.
What are my weaknesses, which usually tie into what don't I like to do? Is that correct?
You're exactly right. And I know myself, I'm a big picture guy. I love to, you know, cast a vision and get people to buy into the vision. As far as the structural aspect of it, it's better for me to have a team to work with that's focused on the details. If you can be somebody who casts a big vision and then come in with people that are structural, detail oriented, that can help you fulfill and implement that vision, that's a cool thing. And I saw that happen during 9 years in office. We really transformed the city.
I like that. Leadership is so important, right? It's as I mentioned, like an entrepreneurial parent, like you're wearing that leadership hat continuously while you're changing other hats continuously as well. It's really important. I love that. You keep mentioning against the status quo, right? I'm a big pro for that. I love that. However, I also wonder, like, why should someone go against the status quo?
Because there's no way to innovate if you don't challenge the status quo.
Mm.
You know, think about a great example, Christopher Columbus, discoverer of America. At that point in time, people said the world is flat. So if Christopher Columbus said, well, the status quo says the world is flat, I'm going to believe what they say. And I don't want to sail over the end of the earth. When I first decided to run for mayor, I was called into a back room and told that I was too young. I had no experience, you know, all the reasons why I shouldn't do it. But I challenged and I was told that I would never win. I challenged the status quo and won, and we had a successful 9-year term in office. So if you just listen, I go back to the vocal minority. People, as an entrepreneur, as an innovator, people are going to give you every reason why you can't do something.
Exactly.
I tell young people, just take that as a challenge. Even if you fail, failure's okay. But mm-hmm. you can't just let fear rule you. You've got to be willing to take a leap of faith.
Exactly. I appreciate you sharing that because that's where I wanted to go. It's scary to go against the status quo. And I'm going to tie that in again with entrepreneurial parents, where as kids, when we went through school, we've pretty much been painted the picture of, you know, you study, right, for as long as you want. And in some countries like the Netherlands and Spain and stuff, you don't get that in that much debt. But I've heard a lot of friends of mine from the United States, for example, they get a lot of debt to finish their studies, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get out of that, then you get a job, right? And then you get a partner, you get your nice house with your picket fence and your puppy and some kids, right? That's pretty much the status quo. And then you see everybody else around you do that. What can make someone within themselves then step over that and step out and confront that and saying like, no, I want to live my vision and actually find what does that mean for me, right? I'm very big on become the me I want to be.
Yeah.
How does one take those steps? What path would you suggest they take?
Now, I was growing up, I had great mentors, but now, particularly in the virtual world we live in, mm-hmm. you can find your tribe. You can find other entrepreneurs out there, and 9 times out of 10, they want to help you. For me, with my book, it's about leadership through the lens of government at the local level. But I've got no pride of authorship, and I tell people it's not a self-help book. It's just me sharing real-world lessons learned in a volatile position because politics are volatile, mm-hmm. and hopefully using those lessons to help others in anything. But here again, your tribe is out there. I mean, the world has shifted significantly. And when I got out of college, I thought exactly what you said. I'm going to go to work for a bank. I'm going to have a wife and 2.5 kids and the white picket fence. During my adult life, I've been in banking, real estate and development, run a small nonprofit, you know, been mayor for 9 years. I had a live call-in radio show for a year. Okay. Now I'm a best-selling author. It's life is always going to change. And you either learn to pivot and adjust to change, or you get run over by it.
Absolutely, absolutely. It makes me come to another question. You've been a mayor for 9 years. That's a long time, right? So at a certain point, you identify yourself and you say like, I am the mayor of, right? And then all of a sudden, I don't know if you decided like, this is enough, like I'm done, or maybe the public that was supposed to choose you decided it's time for change, right? Whatever that was. What impact did that have on you as a person? And how did you go over that now all of a sudden deciding like, I'm going to identify myself with something else, right? Yeah. I see a lot of people losing their identity in it and they get completely lost. So how did you do that?
Man, that is an awesome question. And I'm so glad you asked it. That's the first time I've ever gotten that question. So I was term limited out, meaning that there were term limits on the position of mayor. Okay. I had to come out after my 9 years in office. Mm-hmm. I could have run again in 4 years. It's an adjustment because you're used to being the mayor for 9 years. I'm 47 years old. I come out and you're just not the mayor anymore.
Exactly.
But life is about that adjusting to change. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was going to write a book. And I tell people, one thing and for entrepreneurs to consider is there's an old saying, your mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open.
Mm-hmm.
I've always kept my mind open to change, but yet at 47 years old to go from being the guy to not being the guy anymore, it was a transition and it took some time to get used to it. Particularly people still call you mayor. I guess the title goes with you for the rest of your life.
Mm.
But I've shared with my wife, that was a season of my life. And I think really what I'm called to do now is to mentor that next generation of leaders. You know, I had my time doing that, and there are still people that want me to do it again. And I'm like, look, man, I did it for 9 years. I didn't listen to people that said, why do you want to get involved in all that? And hopefully our city is a better place for it. But I think all too often in leadership positions, and this is in business, in politics and everything, people hold on to perceived power beyond their shelf life. And to me, it's really about engaging and passing the baton of leadership to the next generation. That's what is most important to me right now.
I love that. And again, that ties into what you mentioned before. It's like you really focus on what's for the greater good.
Yep.
What I've heard. That's beautiful. Everybody should have that in their minds when they're doing stuff, when it comes to whatever it is, entrepreneurship, being a partner, being a parent, being a friend or whatever it is, right? Being a human being, look at how can I provide for the greater good?
That's exactly it. It's kind of like, okay, what about what I'm doing in my marriage, in my family, in my business, in my community? What am I doing to make life easier on others and to somehow contribute to the fabric of society? That's what I like about the younger generation. You know, they're so creative and they're positive and they want to change the world. So I talk in the book about cross-generational learning. People have called me the millennial whisperer. And I'm like, well, that's cool if that's true, but I get as much inspiration from the younger generation as they get from me. And it's cross-learning. I mean, I'm learning from 20 and 30 something year olds, teenagers regularly. And I think once you get a little older, it helps keep you young.
True, true. No, absolutely. It's I like the fact that you brought that up, because just in the previous episode that I had a live interview, we both mentioned that at the same time. It's like, if you are a person, you should be a student and a master at the same time.
Amen. Exactly.
And that's what I got from you, what you just shared now as well. It's like you're teaching as well as you're learning. Like I'm learning from our 5-year-old and our 7-year-old just today. Oh, yeah. So if you are open to that, and if that's the way you set it in, then it's beneficial for everyone.
And I've shared with people, how are you ever going to grow as a person if you're only around people that look like you and think like you and act like you? I mean, then you're just living in a bubble and you're reinforcing, you know, your own views. And I think that happens with social networking. I mean, social media a lot. But I'm like, I think it's cool to meet people from different walks of life and different backgrounds, and to just keep an open mind and have a conversation. I think that leads to personal growth.
Absolutely. Yeah, I fully agree. Yeah, that's the advantage and disadvantage of social media, right? I mean, it's easy to troll, like you mentioned before. However, if you're open-minded, like you said, it's really cool to see the difference of answers that people give on like the same question. Me personally, I love that you said that, because I love to write something in social media just to post our question, just to provoke those different kind of responses. Because as you said, like it's so, you can learn so much and have a complete, like sometimes they respond and you're like, wow, I never thought that. Like I never thought of that, right? It's beneficial for everybody, I think, if we all are open-minded, self-aware. We've mentioned a couple of things. Dick, I'm loving this conversation. I want to talk for hours and hours more. However, we come at the end of the episode. What's the best way for people just like me right now that have more questions, that would like to engage with you, that would like to, you know, hear more about your book or whatever it is, right? What's the best way to find you?
They can go to my website, www.deke-copenhaver, C-O-P-E-N-H-A-V is in Victor, E-R. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. You know, I'm all over social media, although I took a little break from it for a while after watching The Social Dilemma. If you haven't seen that, you ought to watch it. I'm easy to find. I've never met another Deke Copenhaver, so I'd love for your listeners to reach out.
Fantastic. Deke, again, thank you so much for being on. Really appreciate it. Everybody, hope you enjoyed this. Make sure to check Deke out. Also, make sure to check out the latest episode if you haven't heard it, or the next one coming up. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to Become the Me I Want to Be. And be sure to join the Facebook group, where we have a whole community of like-minded individuals moving forward in their journeys. A link can be found in the show notes. If you're looking at taking your growth and achievement to the next level, then let's set up a coaching session right now. Just click the link to book your transition call. Till next time, come on, say it with me. I'm becoming the me I want to be.